Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Marissa Levin. Welcome, Marissa. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
She's been on the show many times before, and today we're going to have a special discussion about a new book that she's written. But before we start, let me just give you another background and a reminder on Marissa's background. She founded Information Experts, which is a global strategic communications and education firm back in 1995, and launched it with no outside funding. 17 years later, Information Experts is forecasting $20 million in revenue for 2012, and she's led her firm through some very difficult times, including the explosion of the telecom and the internet, the 9/11 terrorist attacks, which shut down DC pretty much completely, two recessions, a government shutdown, the collapse of the auto finance and housing markets, two cancer scares, my God, and while raising two sons and a completely hands-on mom. So she's an amazing person. If you haven't heard her speak before, you've got to get out and hear her speak. And today, we're going to be talking about the new book that she's written, which is called Built to Scale: How Top Companies Create Breakthrough Growth with exceptional advisory boards. And what possessed you to write this book, Marissa?
Well, so I've had my firm, like you mentioned, almost 18 years, but the truth is everything that I've done by asking for help from others.
Right.
And you cannot grow as a person, you can't grow a business unless you reach out to those around you to create a community of support and excellence around you so that you can learn best practices and how to do things that you don't know how to do, how to avoid mistakes that you otherwise would make, how to recover from mistakes that you've already made, and just how to get from where you are now to where you want to be. You really need experts to be in your corner to help you navigate the path of growth. So a couple years ago, we had really kind of reached this point of stagnation where I just couldn't get past a certain plateau. I couldn't really get past $5 million.
Okay.
We were really spinning our wheels, and I was out to breakfast actually with a mentor, and he said to me, "Have you thought about building an advisory board?" And I said, "I didn't even really know what an advisory board was. You know, what is that? And, you know, where do I find advisors, and how do you do that? And what does that all mean?" And he kind of gave me kind of like a 50,000 foot overview of what an advisory board is. And it was that day that I really set upon the journey of deciding that if I wanted to take my business to the next level, I needed to learn from people who had already done it. I needed to learn from people who could help me overhaul my processes, my infrastructure, my business development capabilities, open up doors for me that I otherwise wouldn't be able to get into, meet people that I couldn't have met, and just have that level of expertise, because I was really learning as I was going along.
So you've given all the reasons, and there probably are more, of why having an advisory board is so important for a growing business. All of these things are really key factors. I mean, they help you build your infrastructure. They mm-hmm. help you do all the things that you need to do to grow your business. What are you seeing in terms of the trends that are occurring right now in small business that perpetuate the need for building an advisory board?
Well, the whole thing about, you know, being a small business, as we know, one of the greatest problems that or challenges that small businesses have is access to capital. And so we need to learn how to do more with less. And when you build an advisory board, some people think, well, I can't really build an advisory board because, first of all, I don't know where to find these people. But secondly, I don't know how to compensate them, or I don't have the money to compensate them.
Right.
So what I did with the book is when I went through my process to put in my advisory board, mm-hmm. I realized after I had presented to a large group of entrepreneurs that I really did follow a process because I'm very process oriented. So the process I came up with, the model that I came up with, stands for select, compensate, associate, how you like, you know, integrate them into your organization, leverage, how you leverage your advisors, and then how you evaluate, evolve, and exit them as your business grows, because a board is a very fluid process. You won't just do it once.
Which stands for scale.
And that scale, right. So that's where the idea of the scale model came in. So to talk about the trends that really make it essential for businesses that want to grow to have a board, one of the things, as I mentioned, is access to capital.
Right.
So I know as a small business owner, I can't go out and hire five VPs that I need. I can't hire a VP of sales and a VP, you know, of capture and a VP of operations. But yet I need all of that.
Right.
And so if you can create an advisory team around you where you're compensating them with equity, mm-hmm. and you are the one who educated us, and you're the subject matter expert in my book on the four different ways that a business owner can actually give equity. Or
another shameless plug for Wayne Zell.
But I mean, you're the person I trusted
Thank you.
You explained how you've helped other business owners create a performance-based system that you can provide small pieces of equity incrementally to advisors that will keep them emotionally invested, financially invested, and really willing and committed to helping you grow your business. I don't make a move without a lot of my advisors,
mm-hmm.
but there's no way I could afford to bring them in and pay them salaries.
Sure.
So that's just one way. That's one trend is the limited access to capital, but that shouldn't stop you from finding the people that you need.
Right.
Another trend is the fact that there's going to be a huge influx of M&A activity because as the government tightens its spending, there's going to be more roll-ups and more contractions of contracts. And in order to survive in that business, again, you need to surround yourself with the right people that can help you build an infrastructure. Because what I've learned as we've scaled our business is that when a business is acquired, and you can certainly correct me if I'm wrong, but just from what I've learned from you and from other experts and just from my own research, in order for a business to be an attractive acquisition candidate, that business cannot just be solely reliant on the business owner.
Absolutely.
And they need to be able to have infrastructure, process, long-term contract backlog. They need to have, solid people. When a business is acquired, all of those things are taken into play. And a business owner can't build all of that themselves.
Well, particularly in the government contracting sector, right, where services are being rendered. But if it's not a long-term backlog of long-term contracts, it would be products or mm-hmm. other valuable assets, including humans. Human resources are probably the most valuable asset that we have in our business today.
Right. And so that's another trend, is the whole M&A activity is going to be picking up and contracts are going to be harder and harder to get. And so you want to make sure you're building out an infrastructure that extends way beyond just the business owner, because
right.
the business owner is not the value in the company.
Right.
It's everything that surrounds the business owner.
It's business succession planning too, in case you don't sell. If
yeah.
there is not an M&A transaction, you still want to have a group there behind you in case something happens to you.
Right. And so that board behind you can not only provide that expertise, but they provide a gateway to other expertise. And I'll give you an example of what's happening at Information Expert. So, historically, we've been very content-centric, where we
right.
design and develop training materials, marketing materials, human capital programs. Well, we have a goldmine of technology and product at Information Experts that we've designed and developed for our clients. We've designed an unbelievable content management system that now some of our clients are actually licensing. And we have a product suite that we're launching
Brilliant.
In August. And the
So
trend,
what you did was you did all this content, you figured out ways how to deliver it faster, and then you created a process, a product of delivering the content, mm-hmm. creating the content so that others can use it.
Right. And we have the services, the training, the marketing, and the human capital that can wrap around it. A lot of companies who bring products to market, they don't have those services that wrap around it. They throw the product out there,
right.
and then you need training, and you need marketing, and you need change management. Well, guess what? We have all those services. So now
Absolutely.
We have the product suite. And we have the services, and we're going to market with these products, and companies are already licensing our products.
How did the board help you do this?
Well, it's funny you ask that, because I'm actually in the process of looking for a board member that is a productization expert. So I am right now recruiting a board member that can help me, really, who has the experience of product licensing, software licensing, that can make sure that I'm doing this right, because I don't want to leave a lot of revenue on the table, and
right.
I want to do this right. So one of the other trends that's happening in the government space right now, and I was just at a board meeting for one of my large contracts last night talking about this, is what we're going to see, not just as a buzzword, but as a mandate, is lowest cost technically acceptable, period. That is what is going to win contracts now.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
Lowest cost technically acceptable. So again, going back to surrounding yourself with experts who can say, you need to reposition your company and your services and your products this way in order to make this happen. I mean, one of my board members is the ex-commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service, and I don't make a move without him.
Right.
He's a procurement god, okay? Obviously, if there's a shift now in procurement direction that everything is going to lowest cost technically acceptable, he's going to help me build my strategy on that. So these are just some of the ways that a board can help a company make sure that they're positioning for success.
Now, you did a lot of research for this book, and you interviewed more than 150 CEOs, and specifically for the book, interviewed 30 CEOs and included excerpts from the interviews in the book, and very valuable information. What were some of the biggest takeaways and the biggest surprises that you experienced in these interviews?
So I would say that the biggest takeaways surrounded the compensation section. That first of all, a lot of business owners, in their acts of desperation, knowing that they needed help when their businesses were just starting out, they gave away way too much equity. Because you know what? If you give away 25% of nothing, it's really not that much, right? If you're just starting out.
Right.
But if you give away 25% of $10 million or $15 million, that ends up being a lot
of
money.
That's a lot of money.
Right. And these board members, they're not even part-time employees. They're only giving you, you know, a certain number of hours, maybe a month. They're not, it's a very, very small amount of invested time that they're making. And you have taught me, you know, when you bring on a board member, you give a very small piece up front and it's performance-based, and then it grows incrementally.
You try to do it on a performance basis.
Yeah.
But you also don't have, you're not obligated to give a certain amount to somebody for them to come on board. You may give them a little bit to see how they do. And if they do a little bit better job, then you give them some more too. There's different ways of approaching it.
So the two things that really surprised me were fell on both ends of the spectrum. The one was that some people just gave away the farm with, you know, out of act of desperation and didn't even tie it to performance and just kind of came up with an arbitrary number. The other side was that people didn't give anything. Mm-hmm. And then they were wondering why their board members weren't very helpful. Well, you get what you pay for. And so if you're not giving away anything, and maybe, you know, the reason was they didn't know how to do it. Okay. Right. It was a lack of knowledge and understanding on the process, which is why the book is so essential. Mm-hmm. I mean, I met someone at a conference that I did a signing at, and she was telling me that she was meeting with an advisor, potential advisor, 3 days later, and she was going to give him 20% of her company. And I said, just buy my
book.
Buy my book for $20.
Let me ask you a question.
Buy it for the price of three Starbucks and read that chapter before you meet with them.
What are some of the biggest mistakes that they make, that the CEOs make?
So the first one, I mean, definitely is the compensation, but also when you do engage a board, there is no structure around it. There's no performance. They're not saying, this is what I'm expecting of you. People aren't given specific jobs. Mm-hmm. And when you build a board, and I talk about the 35 ways to leverage the board in the book, there's actually a list of 35 ways.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways in which you can use it. Like a board is a great recruitment and a retention tool. Okay. So my board doesn't just stop with me. The board is not there to improve Marissa. The board is there to improve the business,
right,
which makes life better for everybody.
If you want to improve Marissa, you go get a coach for that, right?
That's exactly right. And I do have a private coach, but this is about how do I build my business and improve my employees, help them reach their potential, help my company reach its potential. So my, like, for example, we have a new board member and he's amazing. Mm-hmm. And he worked for a very large systems integrator company,
mm-hmm.
and he did capture for, you know, $250 million, $500 million programs. He knows how to do win themes and strategies. So he basically is now mentoring my business development director.
Good.
I mean,
good.
That, you know, it isn't just about Marissa. It's about putting these people into my company. And that's one of the mistakes that a CEO makes, is that they bring on a board and it stops with them.
Right.
And they don't recognize that they have this goldmine of mentors and coaches that can be, you know, infiltrated throughout the company.
Absolutely.
Which becomes recruitment and retention.
Well, we've got about a minute left. Where can listeners buy the book
and
contact
you?
Yeah. How can they find out more about Built to Scale?
So I own a second company as well as Information Experts. I own Successful Culture, and the book is for sale at www.successfulculture.com. It's available in both Kindle format as well as a regular book, but successfulculture.com is exactly where they can get the book and opt into my blog on organizational culture and leadership. And they can reach me at Marissa at successfulculture.com or M. Levin, at informationexperts.com, and I'm all over Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter.
Man, you've got a lot to say, and we just need more time to talk about this book. It's called Built to Scale, How Top Companies Create Breakthrough Growth Through Exceptional Advisory Boards. Check it out on successfulculture.com. You could also probably buy it through Amazon, but it's better to buy it through successfulculture.com. Thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Blueprint for Wealth, and join us next week for another special topic and special guest. Have a great week. Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 o'clock AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Marissa Levin, CEO of Information Experts and author of Built to Scale, How Top Companies Create Breakthrough Growth Through Exceptional Advisory Boards. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com. Is that better? I can't hear you. So George is fixing something right now, I think.
I don't hear myself. Oh,
you should be able to hear yourself.
Now I hear myself.
Okay. Ooh, you should be able to hear me too.
That's weird. Yeah. Okay.
But keep close to that mic and don't look over here. Bring the paper in front of you like this if you want to do anything.
Okay.
So you want to stay right in front of it. And so don't ever talk like you hear it changes. The sound quality changes when you come close. The quality is good.
Yep.
So that's what I want you to keep in the back of your mind. Timing-wise, this is 15 minutes long. I will keep track of the time. You don't need to keep track of the time. So if we run short like we did in the last interview, I'll just wrap it up and, you know, at the end, there'll be a minute left. I'll do this. Doesn't mean stop. Just means sort of wrap up what you're doing.
Okay.
And then I'll ask you, Lars, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they get in touch with you? What's your phone number? What's your email? Whatever you want to give them.
Okay.
And we'll go from there.
Okay.
Should be pretty straightforward.
Okay. And you're going to follow the...
I'm going to follow your script.
Okay.
I'm going to stay close to the script, but don't read it.
Right. But in the background you're going to go into a little bit more, I think you
said. Yeah. I mean, I'd like to dig a little bit into, you know, some of the experience that you had.
You bet.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize, first of all, I forgot that you were at Server Vault, which, you know, you were there at a time when I was trying to get them as a client. So I'm wondering if I met you. I can't remember.
Oh, is that right?
And then I remember, well, Convergence is Clay's company.
That's right.
Did you work for Clay?
I did. Yep. But that was only that was just about a year because that was a time when we couldn't get all the debt financing done, so we did it for a year. But I knew Clay
I set him up in Convergence Holdings. I mean, I got him, you know, the entity set up and stuff like that. Yeah, he's a close friend of mine.
Yeah, I know him well as well. Well, he also went to William & Mary.
Yeah.
As you probably know.
Yeah,
we first met at
small
Anderson.
World. Yeah, it's a small world.
Yeah, yeah.
You and I have so many ties, you know, back to the past.
Yeah, we do.
So we'll go through that a little bit. You know, from this area, where do you live? And do you have a family? That's okay. We can.
Those were some of the questions that your assistant sent me. I just left them there. But
no, I think we'll go into your background first, and I'll
sure.
You know, Dunbar. You know, it'd be great to hear her name on the air. But you know, it's really about you building the business relationship through the radio. So let's try to do that for you.
Okay.
All right, George, are you ready for me? Okay. Hi, welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Lars Okeson. Welcome to the show, Lars.
Thanks, Wayne. Happy to be here.
Thanks for being on the show. Now, Lars has an incredibly deep background that we'll talk about a little bit, but currently he's with Bernstein, which is a private wealth advisory firm, and he just recently joined them in the Washington, D.C. office. But before that, he was an executive vice president and chief financial officer for Steve Case's Revolution LLC. And there you had a tremendous amount of experience as a CFO of a company like that. Give me a little background on what you did there.
Well, thanks, Wayne. I love talking about that experience. I was there for about 5 years and it was just awesome. I mean, working for Steve was really a special time for me. But as you said, I was the CFO for the holding company, Revolution LLC, and we had a portfolio of a couple of dozen investments. So we really were like a private equity firm and managed our portfolio as one. And it was a great experience. We've got, you know, a number of different companies, and we covered just a lot of different types of businesses, and I was very involved in several of them.
Now, you started your career at the same place I started my career before you, at Anderson & Company, which was a great, great firm here in Washington, D.C., before some crisis befell the firm. And you evolved into various roles at various companies, but you always had a tremendous business background, which, you know, I find it interesting. Why did you transition from that area, from being a CFO, from dealing with mergers and acquisitions, with IPOs, with growing companies, with being an entrepreneur, and then shift into the financial services industry? What caused you to do that?
Well, I was at a point in my career where I felt really I had covered, you know, all aspects of the corporate finance world and really enjoyed it very much. But I really felt a calling to apply the corporate finance skills, you know, raising money, generating capital, investing capital on behalf of businesses. I really felt a calling to apply that same experience to individuals and families who needed investment help and advice.
So really, you know, because of your skill set, which again, I think distinguishes you from many financial advisors and financial planners in the area, you actually have that CFO background. You could be the personal CFO for a lot of folks in this area.
Well, that's right. You just stole my my line there, but that's exactly right.
And, I didn't mean to steal your line.
No worries. but the personal CFO aspect is exactly what I try to articulate when I meet with clients and prospects. And Wayne, it really resonates well when I get into my background and the various firms I've worked with and the various industries I've worked with. And having been through an IPO and several mergers and acquisitions, both on the advisory side as well as the corporate side, as well as the investor side,
right.
Now applying that same experience to helping clients understand the capital markets is really resonating well.
What attracted you to Bernstein out of all the various firms that you could have gone to provide financial advisory services?
Well, Bernstein is very unique in many ways. All we do is manage money. We research and manage money. We're not a bank. We're not a lender. We're not an investment bank. So all we do is manage money on behalf of our clients. And so we're quite unique in the industry because most of our competition has many other business lines. This means that we're really unconflicted, and all we do is manage money on behalf of our clients. We don't do any proprietary trading, so we don't manage assets for our firm, just for our clients. And I really felt that if I was going to make a shift into this line of work, I wanted to go somewhere that was very unique, very different, and a firm where I really felt comfortable in the fundamentals of the business and how it was constructed.
What's your specific role at Bernstein today? What do you do there?
So I'm a financial advisor, and that means I am advising my clients on a number of investment planning strategies. We get involved with multi-generational wealth transfer, tax planning, asset allocation, all aspects of helping clients develop an investment plan and then taking that plan and creating an asset allocation that meets their long-term goals and objectives.
Now, there are some other things that, because of your experience as a CFO, that you could bring to the table. I immediately think of, well, there are a lot of companies in the area that use me to help them with their equity plans. And so they have stock option plans, or they'll have phantom stock. And you, because of your background, I would think that you can help them in their planning, in their individual planning for an exit that might occur from the company that they're with, which may be publicly traded, or privately held companies.
That's right. In fact, you hit on one topic that I have a lot of experience with, and that's on the equity compensation, stock options, stock grants, and so forth. And I have found that as I talk now with C-level executives in the area, CEOs and CFOs and heads of sales, that being able to help them understand how to value and monetize their equity compensation is really, really helpful. And we've got some incredible research that I have already put in front of a number of people, and it's really a lot of fun to get into because I've experienced it live as a stock option holder, and now I'm helping clients understand, how to monetize those.
Tell me a little bit more about Bernstein as a firm.
Well, Bernstein has been around since the mid-60s, 1967 to be specific. We were founded by Sanford C. Bernstein, and we as I mentioned earlier, our sole business is really just managing money. The things that make us different, as I mentioned, is the no conflicts, as I talked about earlier. But the other areas that where we're really different is our platform is centralized. So we manage all of the money ourselves. Other than alternative products, we do go outside the firm for alternatives. But with respect to the fixed income and equity investments, we manage those portfolios ourselves. And what that does, Wayne, is it gives us incredible insight and transparency into all of our clients' portfolios such that we can help them manage their tax implications for the various investment activities, foreign currency exposure, risk balance, balancing and risk management. So we're constantly able to, address that client's portfolio and manage it for minimizing risk and hopefully maximizing return, of course.
And minimizing taxes, as you mentioned. I think one of the strengths that Bernstein has brought to many of my clients is the tax-sensitive investment strategies and investment processes that they bring in managing the portfolios.
Yeah, that's actually a huge area. I mean, we've found that because of the full transparency we have in the portfolio, we can make sure that we're timing capital gains and losses together, and we're addressing really when and how to make the trades in a portfolio of a client to make sure that we don't create any unnecessary tax implications.
Now, you and I have talked before about Bernstein, some of the advantages that it brings to the clients that you represent. And you mentioned that, you know, because of the lack of conflicts and the approach that you take, you really approach your client representation in a fiduciary capacity. What does that mean?
Well, that means that we are acting on behalf of our clients only. So, as I mentioned earlier, we don't do any proprietary trading. What I mean by that is we're not trading for our own account. So we're always on the same side of the table as our clients. We're not managing firm money, we're managing client money. And therefore, when we're giving advice and sharing our research, it's always in the best interest of the client. And that's really what a fiduciary is obligated to do.
Okay. And I guess you're focused on long-term outcomes as well.
That's right. Yeah. It's interesting that, the typical investor is really at a big disadvantage when you think about it. I mean, if you look back over the last two decades, the average return of the S&P 500, according to Dalbar, not our own research — our own research confirms this, of course — but the Dalbar study determined that the S&P 500 annualized return is about 9.1% over the last two decades.
9.1% a year.
That's right.
However, still, even after all the changes in the market in the last few years.
Even still, and that just proves that investing is really a long-term game.
Okay.
Yet the average fund investor, if you were just investing in funds, investment funds, well, the return for that same period is just under 4%. And, why is that?
Why is that?
The underperformance really is due to people just trying to time the market, frankly. So oftentimes what happens is as a portfolio goes down in value, well, then investors want to get out. And so they sell at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then they look to start to buy the hot funds or the hot stocks, and they buy them. And
at the top.
They're buying at the top. Well, we, of course, try to do the opposite and buy low and sell high.
Sure.
But unfortunately, because of the investors' behavior, they often do the opposite, which really explains that huge underperformance. And I think also helps understand the benefits that a money manager and a financial advisor can bring to the table.
Can you tell me how Bernstein differs from other money management firms today? I mean, you mentioned a couple of things. One, there are a lot of banks that are getting into the business. The insurance companies are getting into the business. There are people that sell insurance, that sell investments. I mean, how does Bernstein differ from other money management firms?
Well, the biggest difference, as I mentioned, is that all we do is manage the money. So we don't do all those things you just mentioned, which means that our full focus is on money management. And we bring all of our firm's best thinking to our clients. So we're not using the firm's best thinking to decide how to manage client or firm assets, but yet we're doing it to manage client assets.
Okay.
The other big difference we have is our research capability. And that's really been the hallmark for Bernstein. We've always been a research firm. In fact, many firms acquire our firm's research to help them.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm familiar with Bernstein research through other money managers.
That's right. And the research really is something that informs our own money management. It also informs others, but most importantly, it informs our money management. And what it also does is it provides the advisors, such as myself, with incredible tools that I can bring to our clients. Helping clients understand how to sell a business or the things they're going to go through when they sell a business. As you mentioned, the stock option information or stock option compensation, tax planning, tax management. There's just a number of issues, multi-generational wealth transfer, an area that you, of course, is near and dear to you. And we work with our clients, attorneys, and CPAs to really help them, work out the investment planning and the strategies around that. We can't give tax advice and legal advice,
right?
But we work closely with our clients' advisors to help them to get the best outcomes.
So when you mention the tools that you have, you really have some good calculators, some good spreadsheets, models, different things that you can bring to the table to help the advisors do their job in rendering the advice, illustrating why doing a certain transaction may make sense for a particular client.
That's right. In fact, for me as a CFO, a career CFO and a numbers guy, I was actually really, really impressed with the firm's tools. We have something called a wealth forecast analysis that we utilize to really help map out a client's investment plan and let them pre-experience how their investments are going to behave over the 30 or 40 year period that we need to map that out. It's really impressive, and the tool was built by the firm. It's a proprietary tool, and really it's awesome. It's
something just to have access to that tool, I think, would be very valuable.
That's right, and we make that tool available to people such as yourself, Wayne. Attorneys like yourself to help you help your clients understand their investment picture.
And so, the tools are valuable. Are there any other areas that differentiate Bernstein from other money management firms?
Well, I think the biggest area really is the fact that we can manage risk, which is really a hot topic today, Wayne. I mean, the last few decades have been a very volatile period and have caused investors to jump out and jump in at the wrong times. And so what we're trying to do is make sure that we manage that risk, manage that volatility, and attempt to lower the volatility pattern so that investors don't get spooked by the markets and leave at the wrong times.
You do it through a unified platform too, right?
That's right. It's called DAA, Dynamic Asset Allocation. And this is a tool. It's really an overlay that we lay on top of a client's portfolio, and it allows us to address the market's short-term issues so that we can dial up or dial down equity and fixed income exposure to address the short-term market risks.
And there's somebody always looking at each individual's portfolio and doing that dialing up and dialing down, is that right?
That's right. And that because we have the centralized platform and this fully integrated approach, we have complete transparency into every trade within a client's portfolio.
Well, thanks for sharing all this information about Bernstein. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with us today?
No, not really, other than I'm just really psyched to see the glass-enclosed nerve center. I've never seen that before, Wayne. So walking past that to come here was pretty awesome. But no, I think I've shared an awful lot. I really appreciate the time, Wayne.
How do people get in touch with you, Lars, if they have any questions?
Well, the best way is really to call me, which people can call me directly at 202-261-6739. And my email is Lars.Okeson, that's Lars.Okeson at Bernstein.com.
We've been talking with Lars Okeson of Bernstein & Company, and we thank you for listening to Blueprint for Wealth. Tune in next week for another special topic and special guest, and don't forget to read my column, Blueprint for Wealth, in the Washington Business Journal. Have a great week. There you go. 15 minutes.
How was?
George, you want me to do the ready? Okay. Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Lars Okeson of Bernstein & Company, who will tell us about his unique experience as a CFO and how it helps him render financial advisory services to you, the consumer. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a full-service firm located in Fairfax. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com. There you go.
Right, so that'll be on, it's not on the FM version. It's